cajoled into, flattered into, or frightened into.
So sorry, but you're committed. Never mind, it's as you said. The sooner everyone chooses sides, the better.
He got up.
There's no need to go back to the regiment tonight. Both of you join me at the evening meal. I've arranged an entertainment.
For everyone, he added under his breath, with a great deal of satisfaction. Kiku's skillful fingers strummed a chord, the plectrum held firmly. Then she began to sing, and the purity of her voice filled the hushed night. They sat spellbound in the large room that was open to the veranda and the garden beyond, entranced by the extraordinary effect she made under the flickering torches, the gold threads of her kimono catching the light as she leaned over the samisen. Torunaga glanced around momentarily, aware of the night currents. On one side of him, Mariko sat between Blackthorn and Buntaro. On the other, Omi and Yabu, side by side. The place of honor was still empty. Sataki had been invited, but of course he had regretfully declined due to ill health, though he had been seen galloping the northern hills and was presently pillowing with his legendary strength. Naga and very carefully chosen guards were all around, Kyoko hovering somewhere in the background. Kiku-san knelt on the veranda facing them, her back to the garden. Tiny, alone, and very rare.
Mariko was right, Torunaga thought. The courtesan's worth the money.
His spirit was beguiled by her. His anxiety about Zataki lessened.
Shall I send for her again tonight, or shall I sleep alone?
His manhood stirred as he remembered last night.
So, Gyoko-san, you wish to see me?
He had asked in his private quarters at the fortress.
Yes, sire.
He lit the measured length of incense.
Please proceed.
Gyoko had bowed, but he hardly had eyes for her. This was the first time he had seen Kiku closely. Nearness improved her exquisite features, as yet unmarked by the rigors of her profession.
Please play some music while we talk,
he said, surprised that Kiyoko was prepared to talk in front of her. Kiku had obeyed at once, but her music then was nothing like tonight. Last night it was to soothe, an accompaniment to the business at hand. Tonight was to excite, to awe, and to promise.
Sire, Kiyoko had begun formally, first, may I humbly thank you for the honor you do me, my poor house, and Kiku-san, the first of my ladies of the Willow World. The price I have asked for the contract is insolent, I know. Impossible, I am sure. Not agreed to until dawn tomorrow, when both the Lady Kashiki and the Lady Toda in their wisdom will decide. If it were a matter for you, you would have decided long ago. For what is contemptible money to any samurai, let alone to the greatest daimyo in the world?
Kiyoko had paused for effect. He had not taken the bait, but moved his fan slightly, which could be interpreted as irritation at her expansiveness, acceptance of the compliment, or an absolute rejection of the asking price, depending on her inner mood. Both knew very clearly who really approved the amount.
What is money? Nothing but a means of communication, she continued, like Kiku-san's music. What, in fact, do we of the Willow World do but communicate and entertain, to enlighten the soul of man, to lighten his burden?
Torunaga had stifled a caustic response, reminding himself the woman had bought one stick of time for 500 koku, and 500 koku merited an attentive audience. So he let her continue and listened with one ear and let the other enjoy the flow of perfect music that tugged at his innermost being, gentling him into a sense of euphoria. Then he was rudely yanked back into the world of reality by something Gyoko had just asked.
What?
I was merely suggesting that you should take the Willow World under your protection and change the course of history.
How?
By doing what you have always done, sire, by concerning yourself with the future of the whole empire, before your own.
He let the ludicrous exaggeration pass and told himself to close his ears to the music. that he had fallen into the first trap by telling Gyoko to bring the girl, the second by letting himself feast on her beauty and perfume, and the third by allowing her to play seductively while the mistress talked.
The Willow World? What about the Willow World?
Two things, sire. First, the Willow World is presently intermingled with the real world, to the detraction of both. Second, our ladies cannot truly rise to the perfection all men have the right to expect.
Oh?
A thread of Kiku's perfume, one he had never known before, wafted across him. It was perfectly chosen. Involuntarily, he looked at her. A half-smile was on her lips, for him alone. Languidly, she dropped her eyes and her fingers stroked the strings, and he felt them on him intimately. He tried to concentrate.
So sorry, Gyoko-san. You were saying?
Please excuse me for not being clear, sir. First, the Willow World should be separate from the real one. My tea house in Mishima is on one street in the south. Others are scattered over the whole city. It is the same in Kyoto and Nara, and the same throughout all the empire, even in Edo. But I thought that Edo could set the pattern of the world.
How?
His heart missed a beat as a perfect chord fell into place.
All other crafts wisely have streets of their own, areas of their own. We should be allowed our own place, sire. Edo is a new city. You might consider setting aside a special section for your Willow World. Bring all tea houses within the walls of this area, and forbid any tea houses, however modest, outside.
Now his mind concentrated totally, for here was a vast idea. It was so good that he berated himself for not thinking of it himself. All tea houses and all courtesans within a fence, and therefore remarkably easy to police, to watch, and to tax, and all their customers equally easy to police, to watch, and to spy upon. The simplicity staggered him. He knew also the powerful influence wielded by the ladies of the first rank. But his face betrayed none of his enthusiasm.
What's the advantage in that, Gyoko-san?
We would have our own guild, sire, with all the protection that a guild means. A real guild in one place, not spread out, so to speak. A guild that all would obey.
Must obey?
Yes, sire. Must obey. For the good of all. The guild would be responsible that prices were fair and that standards were maintained. Why, in a few years, a lady of the second class in Edo would equal one in Kyoto, and so on. If the scheme was valuable in Edo, why not in every city in your domain?
But those owners who are within the fence dominate everything. They're monopolists, ne? They can charge usurious entrance fees, ne? Can lock the doors against many who have an equal right to work in the Willow World, ne?
Yes, it could be so, sire. And it will happen in some places and in some times. But strict laws can easily be made to ensure fairness, and it would seem the good outweighs the bad, for us and for our honored customers and clients. Second, ladies of...
Let us finish your first point, Gyoko-san,
Torunaga said dryly.
So that's a point against your suggestion, eh?
Yes, sir. It's possible. But any daimyo could easily order it otherwise. And he has to deal with only one guild in one place. You, sir, you would have no trouble. Each area would, of course, be responsible for the peace of the area. And for taxes.
Ah, yes, taxes. It would certainly be much easier to collect taxes. That's a very good point in its favor.
Yoko's eyes were on the incense stick. More than half had vanished.
You, in your wisdom, might decree that our Willow World should be the only world, within the whole world, that is never to be taxed for all time. Never, never, never.
She looked up at him clearly, her voice guileless.
After all, sire, isn't our world also called the floating world? Isn't our only offering beauty? Isn't a large part of beauty youth? Isn't something so fleeting and transient as youth a gift from the gods, and sacred? Of all men, sire, you must know how rare and fleeting youth is. A woman is.
The music died. His eyes were pulled to Kiku-san. She was watching him intently, a small frown on her brow.
Yes, he said honestly. I know how fleeting that can be.
He sipped his cha.
I will consider what you've said. Second?
Second.
Kyoko collected her wits.
Second and last, sire. You could put your chop on the willow world forever. Consider some of our ladies. Kiku-san, for instance, has studied singing and dancing and the samisen since she was six. Every waking moment, she was working very hard to perfect her art. Admittedly, she's rightfully become a lady of the first class, as her unique artistry merits. But she's still a courtesan, and some clients expect to enjoy her on the pillow, as well as through her art. I believe two classes of ladies should be created. First, courtesans, as always. Amusing, happy, physical. Second, a new class. Perhaps geisha could describe them. Art persons. Persons dedicated solely to art. Geishas would not be expected to go to the pillow as part of their duty. They would solely be entertainers, dancers, singers, musicians, specialists, and so give themselves exclusively to this profession. Let geishas entertain the minds and spirits of men with their beauty and grace and their artistry. Let courtesans satisfy the body with beauty, grace, and equal artistry.
Again, he was struck by the simplicity and the far-reaching possibilities of her idea.
How would you select a geisha?
By her aptitude. At puberty, her owner would decide the way of her future, and the guild could approve or reject the apprentice, ne?
It is an extraordinary idea, Gyoko-san.
The woman bowed and shivered.
Please excuse my long-windedness, sire, but this way, when beauty fades and the body thickens, still the girl can have a rare future and a real value. She won't have to go down the road that all courtesans today must travel. I plead for the artists among them, my Kiku-san for one. I petition you to grant the favored few a future and the position they merit in the land. To learn to sing and to dance and to play requires practice and practice over the years. The pillow needs youth, and there is no aphrodisiac like youth. Ne?
No.
Taranaga watched her.
Geishas may not pillow.
That would not be part of a geisha's duty, whatever the money offered. Geishas would never be obliged to pillow, sire. If a geisha wished to pillow with a particular man, it would be her private concern. Or perhaps it should be arranged with the permission of her mistress, the price to be only as high as that man can afford. A courtesan's duty would be to pillow with artistry. Geishas and the apprentice geishas would be untouchable. Please excuse me for talking so long.
Gyoko bowed and Kiku bowed. The barest fraction of incense remained. Toranaga questioned them for twice the allotted time, pleased with the opportunity to learn about their world, probing their ideas and hopes and fears. What he learned excited him. He docketed the information for future use. Then he sent Kiku into the garden.
Tonight, Gyoko-san, I would like her to stay, if she would care to, until dawn, if she's free. Would you please ask her? Of course, I realize that she may be tired now. After all, she's played so superbly for such a long time, and I'll quite understand. But perhaps she would consider it. I'd be grateful if you would ask her.
Of course, sire, but I know she would be honored by your invitation. It's our duty to serve in any way we can, ne?
Yes, but she is, as you so rightly point out, most special. I'll quite understand if she's too tired. Please ask her in a moment.
He gave Gyoko a small leather bag containing 10 koban, regretting the ostentation, but knowing his position demanded it.
Perhaps this would compensate you for such an exhausting evening, and be a small token of my thanks for your ideas.
It's our duty to serve, sire, Kyoko said.
He saw her trying to stop her fingers from counting through the soft leather, and fail.
Thank you, sire. Please excuse me. I will ask her.
Then, strangely and unexpectedly, tears filled her eyes.
Please accept the thanks of a vulgar old woman for your courtesy and for listening. It's just that for all the giving of pleasure, our only reward is a river of tears. In truth, Lord, it is difficult to explain how a woman feels. Please excuse me.
Listen, Gyoko-san, I understand. Don't worry. I'll consider everything you've said. Oh, yes, you'll both leave with me shortly after dawn. A few days in the mountains will make a pleasant change. I would imagine the contract price will be approved, ne?
Gyoko bowed her thanks, then she brushed her tears away and said firmly,
May I therefore ask the name of the honored person for whom her contract will be bought?
Yoshi Toranaga no Minowara.
Now under the Yokose night, the air sweetly cool, Kiku-san's music and voice possessing their minds and hearts, Toranaga let his mind wander. He remembered the pride-filled glow that had swamped Gyoko's face, and he wondered again at the bewildering gullibility of people.
How baffling it was that even the most cunning and clever people would frequently see only what they wanted to see, and would rarely look beyond the thinnest of facades. Or they would ignore reality, dismissing it as the facade. And then, when their whole world fell to pieces, and they were on their knees slitting their bellies or cutting their throats, or cast out into the freezing world, they would tear their topknots or rend their clothes and bewail their karma, blaming gods or kami or luck or their lords or husbands or vassals. Anything or anyone, but never themselves. So very strange.
He looked at his guests and saw they were still watching the girl, locked in their secrets, their minds expanded by her artistry. All except the Anjin-san, who was edgy and fidgeting.
Never mind, Anjin-san, Toranaga thought with amusement. It's only your lack of civilization. Yes, never mind. That will come in time. And even that doesn't matter so long as you obey. At the moment, I need your touchiness, and your anger, and your violence. Yes, you're all here. You, Omi, and Yabu, and Naga, and Buntaro. And you, Mariko, and Kiku-san, and even Gyoko. All my Izu hawks and falcons. All trained, and very ready. All here, except one. The Christian priest. And soon it'll be your turn, Tsuku-san. Or perhaps mine.
Father Martin Alvito of the Society of Jesus was enraged. Just when he knew he should be preparing for his meeting with Toranaga, at which he would need all his wits, he was faced with this new abomination that could not wait.
What have you got to say for yourself?
He lashed out at the cowled Japanese acolyte, who knelt abjectly in front of him. The other brothers stood around the small room in a semicircle.
Please forgive me, Father. I have sinned.
The man stammered in complete misery.
Please forgive. I repeat, it is for Almighty God in his wisdom to forgive, not me. You've committed a mortal sin. You've broken your holy oath. Well?
The reply was barely audible.
Sorry, Father.
The man was thin and frail. His baptismal name was Joseph, and he was 30. His fellow acolytes, all brothers of the society, ranged from 18 to 40. All were tonsured, all of noble samurai birth from provinces in Kyushu. All rigorously trained for the priesthood, though none yet ordained.
I confessed, Father,
Brother Joseph said, keeping his head bowed.
You think that's enough?
Impatiently, Alvito turned away and walked to the window. The room was ordinary, the mats fair, the paper shoji screens poorly repaired. The inn was seedy in third class, but the best that he could find in Yokose, the rest taken by samurai. He stared out into the night, half listening to Kiku's distant voice, soaring over the noise of the river. Until the courtesan finished, Alvito knew he would not be sent for by Torinaga.
"Filthy whore,"
he said, half to himself, the wailing discordance of Japanese singing annoying him more than usual, intensifying his anger at Joseph's betrayal.
"Listen, brothers," Alvito said to the rest, turning back to them. "We are in judgment over Brother Joseph, who went with a whore of this town last night, breaking his holy oath of chastity, breaking his holy oath of obedience, desecrating his immortal soul, his position as a Jesuit, his place in the church, and all that that stands for. Before God, I ask each of you, have you done likewise?"
They all shook their heads.
"Have you ever done likewise?"
"No, Father."
"You sinner! Before God, you admit your sin?"
"Yes, Father. I've already con-"
"Before God, is this the first time?"
"No, this was not the first time,"
Joseph said.
I went with another 4 nights ago, in Mishima.
But yesterday we said Mass. What about your confession yesterday, and the night before, and the one before that?
You didn't.
Yesterday we said Mass. For the love of God, you took the Eucharist unconfessed, with full knowledge of a mortal sin?"
Brother Joseph was grey with shame. He had been with the Jesuits since he was 8.
It was the first time, Father. Only 4 days ago. I've been sinless all my life. Again, I was tempted. And the Blessed Madonna forgive me, this time I failed. I'm 30. I'm a man. We're all men. Please, the Lord Jesus Father forgave sinners. Why can't you forgive me? We're all men.
We're all priests.
We're not real priests. We're not professed. We're not even ordained. We're not real Jesuits. We can't take the fourth vow like you, Father,
Joseph said sullenly.
Other orders ordain their brethren, but not the Jesuits. Why shouldn't...
Hold your tongue.
I won't,
Joseph flared.
Please excuse me, Father, but why shouldn't some of us be ordained?
He pointed at one of the brothers, a tall, round-faced man who watched serenely.
Why shouldn't Brother Michael be ordained? He studied since he was 12. Now he's 36 and a perfect Christian, almost a saint. He's converted thousands, but still not been ordained, though...
In the name of God, you will...
In the name of God, Father, why can't one of us be ordained? Someone has to dare to ask you.
Joseph was on his feet now.
I've been training for 16 years. Brother Matteo, for 23. Juliao, more, all our lives, countless years. We know the prayers and catechisms and hymns better than you. And Michael and I even speak Latin, as well as Portuguese. And we do most of the preaching and debating with the Buddhists and all the other idolaters, and do most of the converting. We do. In the name of God and the Madonna, what's wrong with us? Why aren't we good enough for Jesuits? Is it just because we're not Portuguese or Spanish, or because we're not hairy or round-eyed? In the name of God, Father, why isn't there an ordained Japanese Jesuit?
Now you will hold your tongue.
We've even been to Rome, Michael, Juliao and me,
Joseph burst out.
You've never been to Rome or met the Father General or His Holiness the Pope, as we've done. Which is another reason you should know better than to argue. You're vowed to chastity, poverty and obedience. You were chosen among the many, favoured out of the many. And now you've let your soul get so corrupted that... So sorry, Father, but I don't think we were favoured to spend 8 years going there and coming back, if after all our learning and praying and preaching and waiting, not one of us is ordained, even though it's been promised. I was 12 when I left. Juliao was 11...
I forbid you to say any more. I order you to stop.
Then in the awful silence, Alvito looked at the others, who lined the walls, watching and listening closely.
You will all be ordained in time. But you, Joseph, before God, you will...
Before God?
Joseph erupted.
In whose time?
In God's time! Alvito slammed back, stunned by the open rebellion, his zeal blazing.
Get down on your knees!
Brother Joseph tried to stare him down, but he could not. Then his fit passing, he exhaled, sank to his knees, and bowed his head.
May God have mercy on you. You are self-confessed to hideous mortal sin, guilty of breaking your holy vow of chastity, your holy vow of obedience to your superiors, and guilty of unbelievable insolence. How dare you question our general's orders or the policy of the church? You have jeopardized your immortal soul. You are a disgrace to your God, your company, your church, your family, and your friends. Your case is so serious, it will have to be dealt with by the visitor general himself. Until that time, you will not take communion. You will not be confessed, or hear confession, or any part in any service.
Joseph's shoulders began shaking with the agony of remorse that possessed him.
As initial penance, you are forbidden to talk. You will have only rice and water for 30 days. You will spend every night for the next 30 nights on your knees in prayer to the Blessed Madonna for forgiveness for your hideous sins. And further, you will be scourged. 30 lashes. Take off your cassock.
The shoulders stopped trembling. Joseph looked up.
I accept everything you've ordered, Father, he said. And I apologize with all my heart, with all my soul. I beg your forgiveness, as I will beg his forgiveness forever. But I will not be lashed like a common criminal.
You will be scourged!
Please excuse me, Father, Joseph said. In the name of the Blessed Madonna, it's not the pain. Pain is nothing to me. Death is nothing to me. That I'm damned and will burn in hellfire for all eternity may be my karma, and I will endure it. But I'm samurai. I'm of Lord Harima's family.
Your pride sickens me. It's not for the pain you're to be punished, but to remove your disgusting pride. Common criminal, where is your humility? Our Lord Jesus Christ endured mortification, and he died with common criminals.
Yes. That's our major problem here, Father.
What?
Please excuse my bluntness, Father, but if the King of Kings had not died like a common criminal on the cross, samurai could accept...
Stop!
Christianity more easily. The society's wise to avoid preaching Christ crucified like the other orders.
Like an avenging angel, Alvito held up his cross as a shield in front of him.
In the name of God, keep silent and obey, or you are excommunicated. Seize him and strip him.
The others came to life and moved forward, but Joseph sprang to his feet. A knife appeared in his hand from under his robes. He put his back to the wall. Everyone stopped in his tracks, except Brother Michael. Brother Michael came forward slowly and calmly, his hand outstretched.
Please give me the knife, brother, he said gently.
No. Please excuse me.
Then pray for me, brother, as I pray for you.
Michael quietly reached up for the weapon. Joseph darted a few paces back, then readied for a death thrust.
Forgive me, Michael.
Michael continued to approach.
Michael, stop! Leave him alone!
Alvito commanded. Michael obeyed, inches from the hovering blade. Then Alvito said, ashen,
God have mercy on you, Joseph. You are excommunicated. Satan has possessed your soul on earth, as he will possess it after death. Get thee gone! I renounce the Christian God. I'm Japanese. I'm Shinto. My soul's my own now. I'm not afraid,
Joseph shouted.
Yes, we've pride, unlike barbarians. We're Japanese. We're not barbarians. Even our peasants are not barbarians.
Gravely, Alvito made the sign of the cross as protection for all of them, and fearlessly turned his back on the knife.
Let us pray together, brothers. Satan is in our midst.
The others also turned away, many sadly, some still in shock. Only Michael remained where he was, looking at Joseph. Joseph ripped off his rosary and cross. He was going to hurl it away, but Michael held out his hand again.
Please, brother, please give it to me. It is such a simple gift, he said.
Joseph looked at him a long moment, then he gave it to him.
Please excuse me.
I will pray for you, Michael said.
Didn't you hear? I've renounced God.
I will pray that God will not renounce you, Uragano Tadasama-san.
Forgive me, brother, Joseph said.
He stuck the knife in his sash, jerked the door open, and walked blindly along the corridor, out onto the veranda. People watched him curiously, among them Uo, the fisherman, who was waiting patiently in the shadows. Joseph crossed the courtyard and went toward the gate. A samurai stood in his way.
Halt!
Joseph stopped.
Where are you going, please?
I'm sorry. Please excuse me, I don't know.
I serve Lord Torunaga. I'm sorry, I couldn't help hearing what went on in there. The whole inn must have heard. Shocking bad manners. Shocking for your leader to shout like that and disturb the peace. And you too. I'm on duty here. I think it's best you see the officer of my watch.
I think... Thank you. I'll go the other way. Please excuse.
You'll go nowhere. So sorry. Except to see my officer.
What? Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sorry. Of course.
Joseph tried to make his brain work.
Good. Thank you.
The samurai turned as another samurai approached from the bridge and saluted.
I'm to fetch the Tsuku-san for Lord Torunaga.
Good.
You're expected.
Chapter 43. Torunaga watched the tall priest approach across the clearing, the flickering light of the torches making the lean face starker than usual, above the blackness of his beard. The priest's orange Buddhist robe was elegant, and a rosary and cross hung at his waist. 10 paces away, Father Alvito stopped, knelt, and bowed deferentially, beginning the customary formalities. Torunaga was sitting alone on the dais, guards in a semicircle around him, well out of hearing. Only Blackthorn was nearby, and he lolled against the platform as he had been ordered, his eyes boring into the priest. Alvito appeared not to notice him.
It is good to see you, sire, Father Alvito said when it was polite to do so.
And to see you, Tsuku-san.
Torunaga motioned the priest to make himself comfortable on the cushion that had been placed on a tatami on the ground in front of the platform.
It's a long time since I saw you.
Yes, sire. There's much to tell.
Alvito was deeply conscious that the cushion was on the earth and not on the dais. Also, he was acutely aware of the samurai swords that Blackthorn now wore so near to Torunaga, and the way he slouched with such indifference.
I bring a confidential message from my superior, the Father Visitor, who greets you with deference.
Thank you. But first, tell me about you.
Ah, sire,
Alvito said, knowing that Torunaga was far too discerning not to have noticed the remorse that beset him, much as he had tried to throw it off.
Tonight, I'm too aware of my own failings. Tonight, I'd like to be allowed to put off my earthly duties and go into a retreat to pray, to beg for God's favor.
He was shamed by his own lack of humility. Although Joseph's sin had been terrible, Alvito had acted with haste and anger and stupidity. It was his fault that a soul had been outcast, to be lost forever.
Our Lord once said, "Please, Father, let this cup pass from me." But even he had to retain the cup. We, in the world, we have to try to follow in his footsteps as best we can. Please excuse me for allowing my problem to show.
What was your cup, old friend?
Alvito told him. He knew there was no reason to hide the facts, for of course Toranaga would hear them very soon, if he did not already know them, and it was much better to hear the truth than a garbled version.
It's so very sad to lose a brother. Terrible to make one an outcast. However terrible the crime.
I should have been more patient. It was my fault.
Where is he now?
I don't know, sire.
Toranaga called a guard.
Find the renegade Christian and bring him to me at noon tomorrow.
The samurai hurried away.
I beg mercy for him, sir,
Alvito said quickly, meaning it. But he knew whatever he said would do little to dissuade Toranaga from a path already chosen. Again, he wished the society had its own secular arm, empowered to arrest and punish apostates, like elsewhere in the world. He had repeatedly recommended that this be created, but he had always been overruled, here in Japan, and also in Rome by the general of the order.
Yet without our own secular arm, he thought tiredly, we'll never be able to exercise real discipline over our brethren and our flock.
Why aren't there ordained priests within your society, Tsoko-san?
Because, sire, not one of our acolytes is yet sufficiently well-trained. For instance, Latin is an absolute necessity, because our order requires any brother to travel anywhere in the world at any time. And Latin, unfortunately, is very difficult to learn. Not one is trained yet, or ready.
Alvito believed this with all his heart. He was also bitterly opposed to a Japanese-ordained Jesuit clergy, in opposition to the father visitor.
Eminence, he had always said, I beg you, don't be fooled by their modest and decorous exterior. Underneath, they're all unreliable characters, and their pride and Japanese-ness will always dominate in the end. They'll never be true servants of the society, or reliable soldiers of His Holiness, the Vicar of Christ on earth, obedient to Him alone. Never.
Alvito glanced momentarily at Blackthorn, then back to Toranaga, who said,
But two or three of these apprentice priests speak Latin, eh? And Portuguese. It's true what that man said, eh? Why haven't they been chosen?
So sorry, but the general of our society doesn't consider them sufficiently prepared. Perhaps Joseph's tragic fall is an example.
Bad to break a solemn oath,
Toranaga said. He remembered the year the three boys had sailed off from Nagasaki in a black ship, to be fated in the court of the Spanish king and the court of the high priest of the Christians. The same year Gorodo had been assassinated. 9 years later they had returned, but all their time away had been carefully controlled and monitored. They had left as naive, youthful Christian zealots, and returned just as narrow-minded and almost as ill-informed as when they had left.
Stupid waste, Toranaga thought. Waste of an incredible opportunity, which Gorida had refused to take advantage of, as much as he had advised it. No, Torasan, we need the Christians against the Buddhists,
Gorida had said.
Many Buddhist priests and monks are soldiers, ne? Most of them are. The Christians aren't, ne? Let the giant priest have the three youths he wants. They're only Kyushu stumbleheads, ne? I tell you to encourage Christians. Don't bother me with a 10-year plan, but burn every Buddhist monastery within reach. Buddhists are like flies on carrion, and Christians nothing but a bag of fart.
Now they're not, Toranaga thought, with growing irritation.
Now they're hornets.
Yes, he said aloud. Very bad to break an oath and shout and disturb the harmony of an inn.
Please excuse me, sire, and forgive me for mentioning my problems. Thank you for listening. As always, your concern makes me feel better. May I be permitted to greet the pilot?
Toranaga assented.
I must congratulate you, pilot, Alvito said in Portuguese. Your swords suit you.
Thank you, father. I'm learning to use them, Blackthorn replied.
but sorry to say I'm not very good with them yet. I'll stick to pistols or cutlasses or cannon when I have to fight.
I pray that you may never have to fight again, Pilate, and that your eyes will be opened to God's infinite mercy.
Mine are open. Yours are fogged.
For your own soul's sake, Pilate, keep your eyes open and your mind open. Perhaps you may be mistaken. Even so, I must thank you for saving Lord Torunaga's life.
Who told you that?
Alvito did not reply. He turned back to Torunaga.
What was said?
Torunaga asked, breaking a silence. Alvito told him, adding, Though he's the enemy of my faith and a pirate, I'm glad he saved you, sire. God moves in mysterious ways. You've honored him greatly by making him samurai.
Is Hatamoto also?
Torunaga was pleasured by the priest's fleeting amazement.
Did you bring a dictionary?
Yes, sire, with several of the maps you wanted, showing some of the Portuguese bases en route from Goa. The book's in my luggage. May I send someone for it, or may I give it to him later myself?
Give it to him later, tonight or tomorrow. Did you also bring the report?
About the alleged guns that were supposed to be brought from Macau? The father visitor is preparing it, sire.
And the numbers of Japanese mercenaries employed at each of your new bases?
The father visitor has requested an up-to-date report from all of them, sire, which he will give you as soon as they're complete.
Good. Now tell me, how did you know about my rescue?
Hardly a thing that happens to Torunaga no Minowara is not the subject of rumor and legend. Coming from Mishima, we heard that you were almost swallowed up in an earthquake, sire, but that the Golden Barbarian had pulled you out. Also that you had done the same for him and a lady. I presume the Lady Mariko.
Torunaga nodded briefly.
Yes, she's here in Yokose.
He thought a moment, then said,
Tomorrow she would like to be confessed, according to your customs. But only those things that are non-political. I would imagine that excludes everything to do with me and my various Hatamoto, eh? I explained that to her also.
Avito bowed his understanding. With your permission, could I say Mass for all the Christians here, sire? It would be very discreet, of course. Tomorrow?
I'll consider it.
Torunaga continued to talk about inconsequential matters for a while. Then he said,
You have a message for me? From your chief priest?
With humility, sire, I beg to say that it was a private message.
Torunaga pretended to think about that, even though he had determined exactly how the meeting would proceed, and had already given the Anjin-san specific instructions how to act and what to say.
Very well.
He turned to Blackthorn.
Anjin-san, you can go now, and we'll talk more later.
Yes, sire, Blackthorn replied.
So sorry, the black ship. Arrived Nagasaki? Ah, yes, thank you,
he replied, pleased that the Anjin-san's question didn't sound rehearsed.
Well, Tsuku-san, has it docked yet?
Alvito was startled by Blackthorn's Japanese and greatly perturbed by the question.
Yes, sire. It docked 14 days ago.
Ah, 14, said Torunaga. You understand, Anjin-san?
Yes, thank you.
Good. Anything else you can ask Tsuku-san later, ne?
Yes, sire. Please excuse me. Blackthorn got up and bowed and wandered off. Torunaga watched him go.
A most interesting man. For a pirate? Now, first tell me about the black ship.
It arrived safely, sire, with the greatest cargo of silk that has ever been.
Alvito tried to sound enthusiastic.
The arrangement made between the lords Harima, Kiyama, Onoshi, and yourself is in effect.
Your treasury will be richer with tens of thousands of koban by this time next year. The quality of silks is the finest, sire. I've brought a copy of the manifest for your quartermaster. The Captain General Ferreira sends his respects, hoping to see you in person soon. That was the reason for my delay in coming to see you. The Visitor General sent me post-haste from Osaka to Nagasaki to make certain everything was perfect. Just as I was leaving Nagasaki, we heard you'd left Edo for Izu, so I came here as quickly as I could, by ship to Port Numazu with one of our fastest cutters, then by road. At Mishima, I fell in with Lord Zateki and asked permission to join him.
Your ship's still at Numazu?
Yes, sire. It will wait for me there.
Good.
For a moment, Toranaga wondered whether or not to send Mariko by that ship to Osaka, then decided to deal with that later.
Please give the manifest to the quartermaster tonight.
Yes, sire.
And the arrangement about this year's cargo is sealed?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Now the other part. The important part.
Arvita's hands went dry. Neither Lord Kiyama nor Lord Onoshi will agree to forsake General Ishido. I'm sorry. They will not agree to join your banner now, in spite of our strongest suggestion. Toranaga's voice became low and cruel.
I already pointed out I required more than suggestions.
I'm sorry to bring bad news in this part, sire, but neither would agree to publicly come over to...
Ah, publicly, you say? What about privately, secretly?
Privately, they were both as adamant as pub...
You talk to them separately or together?
Of course, together and separately, most confidentially. But nothing we suggested would...
You only suggested a course of action? Why didn't you order them?
It's as the Father Visitor said, sire. We can't order any daimyo or any...
Ah, but you can order one of your brethren, eh?
Yes, sire.
Did you threaten to make them outcast too?
No, sire.
Why?
Because they've committed no mortal sin. Arvito said it firmly, as he and Delacroix had agreed. But his heart was fluttering, and he hated to be the bearer of terrible tidings, which were even worse now, because the Lord Harima, who legally owned Nagasaki, had told them privately that all his immense wealth and influence were going to Ishido. Please excuse me, sire, but I don't make divine rules, any more than you made the code of Bushido, the way of the warrior. We have to comply with what...
You make a poor fool outcast for a natural act like pillowing when two of your converts behave unnaturally. Yes, even treacherously. When I seek your help, urgent help, and I'm your friend, you only make suggestions. You understand the seriousness of this, ne?
I'm sorry, Lord. Please excuse me, but...
Perhaps I won't excuse you, Tsuko-san. It's been said before. Now everyone has to choose a side.
Toranaga said. Of course we are on your side, sire. But we cannot order Lord Kiyama or Lord Onoshi to do anything.
Fortunately, I can order my Christian.
Sire?
I can order the Anjin-san freed. With his ship, with his cannon.
Beware of him, sire. The pilot's diabolically clever. But he's a heretic, a pirate, and not to be trusted.
Here the Anjin-san's a samurai and Hatamoto. But see, perhaps he's a pirate. If he's a pirate, I imagine he'll attract many other corsairs and Wako to him. Many of them. What a foreigner does on the open seas, his own business, ne? That's always been our policy, ne?
Alviso kept quiet and tried to make his brain function. No one had planned on the Ingleses becoming so close to Toranaga.
Those two Christian daimyos will make no commitments,
Not even a secret one?
No, sir. We tried every...
No concession? None?
No, sir.
No barter? No arrangement? No compromise? Nothing?
No, sir. We tried every inducement and persuasion. Please believe me.
Alvisa knew he was in the trap, and some of his desperation showed.
If it were me, yes, I would threaten them with excommunication, though it would be a false threat, because I'd never carry it through, not unless they had committed a mortal sin, and wouldn't confess or be penitent and submit. But even a threat for temporal gain would be very wrong of me, sire. A mortal sin. I'd risk eternal damnation.
Are you saying if they sinned against your creed, then you'd cast them out?
Yes, but I'm not suggesting that could be used to bring them to your side, sire. Please excuse me, but they're totally opposed to you at the moment. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. They both made it very clear, together and in private. Before God, I pray they change their minds. We gave you our words to try, before God, the Father Visitor and I. We fulfilled our promise. Before God, we failed.
Then I shall lose,
Toranaga said.
You know that, don't you? If they stand allied with Ishido, all the Christian daimyos will side with him. Then I have to lose. 20 samurai against one of mine. Ne?
Yes.
What's their plan? When will they attack me?
I don't know, sir.
Would you tell me if you did?
Yes. Yes, I would.
I doubt it,
Toranaga thought, and looked away into the night, the burden of his worry almost crushing him.
Is it to be Crimson Sky, after all?
He asked himself helplessly.
The stupid, bound-to-fail lunge at Kyoto?
He hated the shameful cage that he was in. Like the Taiko and Gororo before him, he had to tolerate the Christian priests, because the priests were as inseparable from the Portuguese traders as flies from a horse, holding absolute temporal and spiritual power over their unruly flock. Without the priests, there was no trade. Their goodwill as negotiators and middlemen in the black ship operation was vital because they spoke the language and were trusted by both sides. And if ever the priests were completely forbidden the empire, all barbarians would obediently sail away, never to return. He remembered the one time the Taiko had tried to get rid of the priests, yet still encouraged trade. For 2 years, there was no black ship. Spies reported how the giant chief of the priests, sitting like a poisonous black spider in Macau, had ordered no more trade in reprisal for the Taiko's expulsion edicts, knowing that at length the Taiko must humble himself. In the third year, he had bowed to the inevitable and invited the priest back, turning a blind eye to his own edicts and to the treason and rebellion the priests had advocated.
There's no escape from that reality,
Toranaga thought.
None. I don't believe what the Anjin-san says. The trade is as essential to barbarians as it is to us, that their greed will make them trade, no matter what we do to the priests. The risk is too great to experiment, and there's no time, and I don't have the power. We experimented once and failed. Who knows? Perhaps the priests could wait us out 10 years. They're ruthless enough. If the priests order no trade, I believe there will be no trade. We could not wait 10 years. Even 5 years. And if we expel all barbarians, it must take 20 years for the English barbarian to fill up the gap, if the Anjin-san is telling the whole truth, and if, and it is an immense if the Chinese would agree to trade with them against the southern barbarians. I don't believe the Chinese will change their pattern. They never have. 20 years is too long. 10 years is too long. There's no escape from that reality. Or the worst reality of all, the specter that secretly petrified Gororo and the Taiko, and is now rearing its foul head again. That the fanatical, fearless Christian priests, if pushed too far, will put all their influence and their trading power and sea power behind one of the great Christian daimyos. Further, they would engineer an invasion force of ironclad, equally fanatic conquistadores, armed with the latest muskets to support this one Christian daimyo, like they almost did the last time. By themselves, any number of invading barbarians and their priests are no threat against our overwhelming joint forces. We smash the hordes of Kublai Khan, and we can deal with any invader. But allied to one of our own, a great Christian daimyo with armies of samurai, and given civil wars throughout the realm, this could, ultimately, give this one daimyo absolute power over all of us. Kiyama or Onoshi? It's obvious now. That has to be the priest's scheme. The timing's perfect. But which daimyo? Both, initially, helped by Harima of Nagasaki. But who'll carry the final banner? Kiyama. Because Onoshi the leper's not long for this earth, and Onoshi's obvious reward for supporting his hated enemy and rival Kiyama would be a guaranteed, painless, everlasting life in the Christian heaven with a permanent seat at the right hand of the Christian God. They 400,000 samurai between them now. Their base is Kyushu, and that island safe from my grasp. Together, those two could easily subjugate the whole island. Then they have limitless troops, limitless food, all the ships necessary for an invasion, all the silk, and Nagasaki. Throughout the land, there are perhaps another 500,000 or 600,000 Christians. Of these, more than half, the Jesuit Christian converts, are samurai. All sorted nicely among the forces of all daimyos, a vast pool of potential traitors, spies, or assassins, should the priests order it. And why shouldn't they? They'd get what they want above life itself. Absolute power over all our souls, thus over the soul of this land of the gods. To inherit our earth and all that it contains, just as the Anjin-san has explained, has already happened 50 times in this new world of theirs. They convert a king, then use him against his own kind, until all the land is swallowed up. It's so easy for them to conquer us, this tiny band of barbarian priests. How many are there in all Japan? 50 or 60? But they've the power, and they believe. They're prepared to die gladly for their beliefs, with pride and with bravery, with the name of their god on their lips. We saw that at Nagasaki, when the Taiko's experiment proved a disastrous mistake. Not one of the priests recanted. Tens of thousands witnessed the burnings, tens of thousands were converted, and this martyrdom gave the Christian religion immense prestige that Christian priests have fed on ever since. For me, the priests have failed, but that won't deter them from their relentless course. That's reality, too. So it's Kiyama. Is the plan already settled, with Ishido a dupe, and the Lady Ochipo and Yeemon also? Has Harima already thrown him with them secretly? Should I launch the Anjin-san at the Black Ship and Nagasaki immediately? What shall I do? Nothing more than usual. Be patient, seek harmony, put aside all worries about I or thou, life or death, oblivion or afterlife. Now or then, and set a new plan into motion. What plan? He wanted to shout in desperation. There isn't one! It saddens me that those two stay with the real enemy.
I swear we tried, sir.
Alvito watched him compassionately, seeing the heaviness of his spirit. Yes, I believe that.
I believe you and the Father Visitor kept your solemn promise, so I will keep mine. You may begin to build your temple at Edo at once. The land has been set aside. I cannot